Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the Kitchen Garden Magazine podcast, your fortnightly fix of gardening features, advice and chat. Subscribe and follow us now to never miss an episode.
Hello and welcome, folks, to this first live stream from Kitchen Garden Magazine. We're all very excited. We've got the editorial team here, so you can see Emma there at the bottom of the screen. Yeah, and we've got Tony. And we're here to sort of chat around what we're doing on the plot. And also to answer any of your questions, if you'd like to put them up on the screen. But we're very capable of just waffling away about what's going wrong on the plot, aren't we, really, this month?
Well, look, we talk about.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to start on cucamelons. Who likes cucamelons? This is the second time I've grown them. I keep thinking, everyone says how nice they are. Don't know if everyone's... Well, this is the plant behind me, sort of a trailing thing, and you get these little melon-like fruits off of it, more like a cucumber in flavour, really. But they're just full of pips. I don't like them. So now I've grown them, I don't know what to do with it. If anyone's got any recipe suggestions, I'd be very glad to hear them.
You get a lot of fruit as well, don't you? I mean, like I've said to you before, people pickle them. So that maybe they do better being pickled. It's a bit like pickled cucumbers.
You've got a pickling recipe, anybody? I'd be very glad to hear it before I throw it in the compost. I'm sure they'll make very good compost.
I'm sure somebody must love them somewhere. I've actually never grown them, and it's only because people like you, Steve, keep telling me how you don't like them, so I've never really bothered. But yeah. I should.
Actually, I'm scuppered if I come to have to write a feature for the magazine now, aren't I? I'm going to have to say, pretend I like them, and everyone in the world will know I don't like them.
Yeah, so, yeah, one not to try.
Yeah, you just need to be honest.
Yeah.
Some people do like them. We've had people write into us and say they like them. So, you know, it's a question of taste, isn't it? Everybody's got different tastes. So,
if there's anybody out there who actually likes them, let us know.
Please do. Yeah. Any recipes? Well, anything to make them edible?
What about something that we all grow, or a lot of people grow? Tomatoes. So many people are saying their tomatoes are not ripening.
It's been my worst year for tomatoes.
I'm going to make everybody jealous now.
No, you're just bragging.
What variety are they?
That's a honeycomb, and there are some sun gold in there. Honeycomb, they're gorgeous. They're so sweet. You've got to buy. You must have grow honeycomb or sun gold. They're very similar, but they're so sweet. But they're only just ripening. I mean, last week they were like all green, and nothing was happening. So it seems really late, and I think it's just the lack of sun, isn't it?
I'm growing some outside and inside, and there's not much between them, to be honest. Just can't get the heat in the polytunnel or the greenhouse.
They're really slow.
This time last year I had zillions. Now I've got you know, I'm hardly got a meal out of them at the minute. I've been growing a couple of new varieties. This one, I don't know if you can see it. It's Dora,
and
quite attractive. Tomato.
Oh.
But they're quite sweet. Once they're fully ripe, they're quite nice.
Yeah.
That's the problem, getting them fully ripe.
I've got some yellow Mimi. That's one I grew last year, and that's really, really nice. Nice and sweet. Little cherry top.
Sweet.
Yellow Mimi.
Oh, yeah.
It is an F1 hybrid, so you can't save the seeds on that. And I have got I grew loads of big tomatoes this year, and the only one that's ripened yet is this Oxheart. But it's lovely. But
you've done well to get that ripe already, I think, given the year you've had. I've got a new one here called Marigold. It's a bit like Sun Gold, bit bigger, and I haven't really tried them yet. And this one isn't fully ripe, but it's okay. It's not as sweet as you'd expect a Sun Gold, but it could be that it's not fully ripe yet. But when I picked one this morning, look what I found.
Oh, is it Blossom End Rot?
Blossom End Rot. It's only on one of them.
So what? So that means maybe a lack of watering, or I mean irregular watering, and
yeah, it looks like it. Yeah.
Oh, Tony, you've got to be out there with your hose pipe or your watering can. See, you've got yourself
a
for that one.
You find some varieties are more prone, don't you? I find. And I think it's to do with the breakdown of the calcium in the cells, isn't it, that causes it?
Yeah.
And I think maybe some varieties are just more prone.
Yeah, well, definitely.
It's only on one of them, so hopefully the others, you know, the others are still ripening. But, yeah, it's probably down to me not watering as regularly as I should have done.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We've got plenty of questions coming in here, so we better answer a few, I think.
Okay.
We've got, first question is from Malcolm and Sharon Taylor, and they say they have a patio pear, leaves keep curling and turning black. No idea what you should do to help. Is this pests or positioning? It's in full sunlight. Well, just to get the ball rolling, I know I've got a wall train pear, and every year it gets a thing called pear leaf blister mite, which sounds a lot worse than it is. But you get little patches on the leaves really early in the season, which start green. They sort of look like an olive green, really, just little spots. But then they can gradually turn black as the season goes on and cover bigger portions of the leaf. And then you find that the whole, you know, quite big sections of the leaf have gone completely black. So that's a possibility. And all I do with those, there's no sprays or anything, just pick them off. Sometimes you get a whole branch which is much more badly affected than the rest, so I just prune that off and send it away. And they don't put it in my compost bin, I send it away in the green council bin, and it seems to stay at a reasonable level. You know, I don't get it doesn't affect the crop at all. But you can get scab, can't you, on pear trees as well as apple trees?
Yeah, that can cause dark lesions, can't it? I mean, sometimes you can get an infestation of aphids very early in the year and you don't even spot them. And then they disappear, but you're left with the damage and you've got curled leaves and then they go black. And if you look now, you wouldn't see any aphids, but the damage had already been done. So, you know, it's a possibility that's happened earlier on.
Yeah.
In which case, there's nothing, you know, hopefully the tree will just grow out of it.
Yeah, and sometimes if it's a dwarfing one, or if it's in a pot, if it's on a dwarfing rootstock, or if it's in a pot, it tends to be under more stress than a tree planted in the soil, you know, a normal sized tree planted in the soil. So a little more food and water might help as well. But we've got loads of questions. So we've got, is Joe, I read the cherry article in the September mag, but I inherited a cherry on one allotment, but don't know which type it is for pruning. How can I tell? So really it's more down to the type of cherry, isn't it? Whether it's a Morello type cherry, so a sort of more of a culinary type cherry, or a dessert cherry. I think. But I think the key with cherries is just not to prune them any more than you can help, isn't
You don't tend to prune them too much, really. And then if you do, it tends to be more a thing you do in the summer, isn't it? Or just to take off a few, you know, any branches that are really crossing another branch or shading out fruit and that sort of thing, or overcrowded, or and often shoots from the bottom of the tree. But it doesn't want to be done too late, does it?
No, not really. If you haven't done it, you need to do it now. But all I would do, is really dead, dying, diseased bit. And the occasional shoot maybe that's got really low. Sometimes with cherries, they get heavy crop, they hang really low, don't they? And because you're not pruning, they tend to get longer and longer. So you could just tip back a few shoots, but I wouldn't do, I'd do as little as possible basically with that. So that's easy. Don't do it. Muddy Boots. Hello, Muddy Boots. We know Muddy Boots.
Hello.
Yeah, a.k.a. Nigel, friend of KG, wrote a great, won't try and tell, you're not asking about parsnips, Muddy Boots, you know a lot more than I do, a feature for us in February in the magazine. He says, hello all, had a great brassica crop this year, except for cauliflowers. Oh, yeah. They've blown to reaching the size of tennis balls. How have yours done? Well, I've got a confession, Muddy Boots. I'm absolutely useless with cauliflowers. I think Tony's probably had the best cauliflower.
Well, I didn't grow any this year. Last year, they were a bit disastrous, to be honest. Mine all blew as well. They need a lot of looking after, don't they?
Yeah.
If the conditions are just not right one year, they do that, don't they? You don't even always know what's caused it.
Yeah, sometimes I've had, you know, in the same row, I've had a couple that have done really well and a couple that have just gone, you know.
We had all that dry weather, didn't we, early on, that would really put a lot of them under stress.
Hmm.
And even if you're watering, it's never quite the same as rain, is it, when you water yourself? And sometimes that stress causes it, doesn't it?
Then we had
a lot of rain. I mean, it depends where you live, of course, but I think generally that seems to have been the pattern.
Yeah, anything that stresses them tends to make them bold, doesn't it, as you say. So, and we certainly had although we've had a lot of rain this year, we did have a little dry spell early on. So if that happened even when it's sort of early in there, while the plants are still young, it can affect them later on, can't it?
Yeah.
Nice fertile, deep soil, like plenty of manure under them, don't they? Although they don't want to be too much nitrogen.
They're not really an easy crop, are they? I find no.
So I don't think we've solved that one for you, Matty Boots. That's so we're all useless at cauliflowers. But, put them in and hope for a good season, I think.
Well, yeah. we know some readers are really good because we've had some fantastic pictures of cauliflowers come in. So there are people out there that probably consistently grow fantastic cauliflowers. I have to say I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Sadly.
So we've got some more here. We've got Chris Pick, my main crop potatoes, Cara, have lost a lot of their outer skin. Will they store in sacks? He's asking.
Mm.
I think if the skins are damaged, you're probably better using them, really.
Yeah, I don't quite know what I mean by that, really. I suppose, I mean, what is he meaning they, if you're cooking them and they kind of, because I know sometimes when you cook them, they kind of, the outer skin kind of just comes away, doesn't it? I mean, if they're looking okay and they're looking clean and there's no markings on them when you're bringing them out of the ground, and I can't see there'd be a problem, really. But
it's unusual for the outer skin to disappear, isn't it? It's so strange.
Yeah, the skins have got to be intact and fairly Well, you'd say set, I suppose. Normally you'd lift them, wouldn't you? Leave them on the soil for a few days if you can, if the weather's okay. They sort of hard and dry a little bit before you put them in the sacks.
Maybe that's it. It's kind of like, it's almost like curing them, isn't it? It's kind of, dig them and let them kind of cure for a few days in the dry and then store them.
Yeah. I think I'd prefer to use the ones that are, obviously damaged, but got that one. Perhaps, I don't know, often the amount of rain, if you've had an awful lot of rain, that can affect, perhaps not so much the skins, but certainly inside, can't it? It can make them watery.
They disintegrate and then you cook them, don't they?
Yeah.
We've had a question from Time Flight. How do you make them go red, mice stay green, okay in soup? I'm not sure. Is that tomatoes, Time Flight? You might have to give us a bit more info on that one.
I think that's tomatoes.
Well,
I mean, the old trick is if you've got them in a greenhouse, is hanging up bananas in the amongst the leaves, isn't it? Because it gives off the ethylene gas, which then encourages the ripening process. That's classic. People try that. But I mean, I think people every time this time every year, everybody gets like this. Oh, my tomatoes are all green, and then all of a sudden.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And it only takes a week and of a bit of nice weather, or not even nice weather, as long as it's reasonably warm, and they just suddenly go, don't they? And you think, oh, what was I worrying about? And then you've got a glut then.
That's good, yeah.
I mean, obviously, once you get, I mean, I think at the moment, if they're still green, I wouldn't worry. But I think when you get beyond sort of end of August, beginning of September, if they're all green, that's when it gets a little bit more, because then the temperature's dropping, you're not getting the sunlight. They don't always ripen once you get right to the end of the season. But at the moment, I don't think there's anything to worry about, really.
No. My worry is that they're getting, the plants getting rot on them. I don't know, you probably won't be able to see it, but it's got, it's getting grey mould, so it's gradually, and that's gradually killing plants back down the stem and the trusses.
Yeah,
and we've got all the vents open in the, the doors open in the polytunnel. It's all well ventilated and air going through. It's still happening. They're just sitting there rotting this year. But hopefully, as you say, within a few days even, you can suddenly start to notice that they're going, can't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope that helps, Time Flight. So don't pull them up and throw away or put them in soup just yet. They'll be fine, I'm sure. We've got Anne Betteridge. If the tomatoes get blight in and outside, do the spores hang around for next year? I think you know all about blight, don't you? But Ems, you got had that this year.
Funny, because I've got a bit. I think I've actually got some blight on the indoor tomatoes this year. I've never had that before. Mm-hmm. What I did was I spotted it really early, and I went in really quick and very carefully took the leaves off. But there were some I could see the spores. There were some spores. But I think those might have been grey mould. So I don't know. I'm a bit sort of not quite sure, really. But I mean, I would certainly in a greenhouse, I've cleaned out my greenhouse every year, but I occasionally will leave the odd sort of, I'll find the odd rotten tomato in the corner or the odd leaf. Do you know what I mean? And that's just the material that if you're not careful, you can get, these fungal infections kind of remaining. So, I mean, I'm thinking I might have blight in the greenhouse this year. So I'm planning to, once I've got everything out this year, to absolutely really sterilise the inside of the greenhouse. I mean, I'm lucky that I've got, it's not soil, I've got, it's just paving slabs. So I use grow bags, but I probably will, you know, use something like Jay's Fluid or some other kind of Citrox, maybe, if you don't like Jay's, but you know what I mean? Something to really sterilise, literally spray all of the framework and all of the floor and just see if that will help. I think it's
probably a good idea, not just for blight, is it? It's for anything, because you know, you just give it a good clean and gets rid of anything then, doesn't it? That's might be lingering there.
I think that's the key. You know, it will hang over from one year to the next on plant material, like you say.
Yeah.
If you've got potatoes with it outside and you get, they're called volunteers, don't they? So once you've basically forgotten and left in the soil and they come up, they can be infected as well. So it's worth getting rid of all those, because of course it's the same disease on potatoes as tomatoes, so it will spread from one to the other. Mm. So as long as you get rid of all the old material, when you, like you say, like you're doing, Tony, you know, give it a good spray.
And it's amazing how many volunteers you get as well, isn't it? Mm. I mean, you think you've cleared your patch, and the next year you've got all these potato shoots coming up everywhere. Very. You know, so as soon as you spot them, pull them up, especially if you've had blight.
Yes, and don't compost them. They very often regrow in the compost bin, don't they? And you've got the same problem again. So I hope that helps, Anne. We've got, RoboTube saying hello to Muddy Boots. And then he's asking, does the trick of putting tomatoes in a paper bag with a banana work? Yes, it does, doesn't it? We mentioned that you can hang a banana skin over the plants near a ripening truss, and it gives off a ethylene gas that helps to ripen them. But putting them in a paper bag is just as good, or in a drawer together, you know, somewhere indoors will do that as well. We've got another pruning question from Miss Jo. Hoping to take over a pretty much untended plot which has some old apples on it. They don't produce much fruit, so I'm not sure how to prune those. Again, I suppose with apples, you normally, although you can summer prune, normally if it's renovation, you do that in the winter, wouldn't you, really? And if they're really bad, then you might even do it in stages over 2 or 3 years. Rather than just if you I think the worst thing you can do is give an apple tree, any tree really, but give it a haircut. My neighbour's done that. I did warn him, but all we've got now is a forest of little shoots which have come up and reaching for the sky, not an apple on them, but thousands.
You're better off if it's a really big old, you know, an old tree, you're better off taking sort of a few big limbs off, sort of in the centre, so to open the centre, to open it up, to create more space and air. You're better off doing that than, like you say, an all-over haircut. You've got an all-over haircut, lots of just little trimming, little cuts. As you say, you get all these water shoots, which, you know, I mean, you find that it's interesting, because my niece has had some renovation work done on some old trees in an allotment, and they did do quite a hard cut. They took quite big branches off. But I must admit, this year they've still produced quite a lot of growth and not a lot of apple. But I think that sometimes does happen generally. I think once you give, if an apple tree's been left and then you give it a good prune, it kind of responds by going into sort of like, quick, produce a load more. But it will settle down. And I think especially if you take some of these water shoots off, which you may have to do next summer, and you can tell the water shoot because they're bolt upright. They're like, aren't they? They're just They're really, really whippy shoots. They're really thin, whippy shoots, and you quite often grow bottom, right? And if you take them back right to the very base, and then if you get some that are coming off at the right angle, you can probably leave some because they can form another structure, another branch, but quite often a lot of them will have to be just trimmed off.
Yeah, but wait until it's lost its leaves, basically, to do any major pruning. Although you could, I mean, now there's no reason why you couldn't take off dead bits, diseased bits. You know, if there's any canker on the branches, like you'll find split bark, and you might even get woolly aphids, sort of lots of fluff in there, which is aphids. You can cut those bits off now if you want to, but any major pruning in the winter, and then gradually over 2 or 3 years. But always worth keeping old trees, I think, because apart from the apples, they're full of wildlife, aren't they? They support so much wildlife, which can only benefit the rest of your plot, really.
And they're often varieties, you know, maybe old varieties that are just not seen anymore. So it's always worth trying to keep them. And if you, you know, if you think it's a really nice apple and it's worth trying to find out what it is by going to one of those apple days, or if you, you know, if you find think it's something unusual, it's worth trying to find somebody who knows, you know, that can help you perhaps even propagate it so that you can keep it going, because it's a shame to lose these old varieties, isn't it? And there's some wonderful old varieties on allotments and around the country.
Yeah. We've got another pruning question here from Anne. Anne Wilson. Can you advise me how and when to prune my 2-year-old espalier pear tree? So although we've just said prune in the winter, if it's a trained form like an espalier, just to confuse everybody, you quite often do that in the summer, don't you? There's summer pruning and winter pruning. I think winter pruning tends to encourage growth, as we've said, you know, always water shoots and things. Summer pruning is more about encouraging fruit buds. So if it's already 2 years old, it should already have the start of a shape. So the question when to prune it, I'd say prune that in the summer. So you'd be pruning back any growth, that any excessive growth, quite hard really, back to 1 or 2 leaves from the base, and then just training in any other shoots that you want to continue making your espalier shape.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we were just saying, don't give a tree an all-over haircut. But funnily enough, in case of espaliers and these well-trained trees, in the summer you kind of are giving it a bit of a light overall haircut. So that rule doesn't apply to these very, very highly trained trees, fans and whatever, because they will produce such a lot of excessive growth in the summer. It's worth just, as you said, just taking some of the longer shoots back.
Oh, we've got a question from Allotment John. Every year on our allotment, badgers eat all the sweet corn just before they're ripe for picking. Incredibly protected by chicken wire. Are there any deterrents we can use?
This reminds me, I've got to tell you this story now, because there was I visited an allotment once. I was judging, and this guy was always having his sweet corn stolen by the badgers. And no word of a lie, he built a 6-foot fence around his sweet corn, and he got into his sweet corn with ladders. So he used a ladder at one side and the ladder into the side into the thing. And it worked. It was a bit extreme. It was literally a 6-foot, you know, panelled fencing all the way around it.
Oh, well, there's your answer then. 6-foot fencing. I know you have problems with sweet corn, Tony, don't you? But it's not badgers, is it? What was it? It was eating.
No, it's more birds. I was just wondering about those Defenders sprays you can get. It's called Defenders, a company. They you can spray it on leaves, and it deters foxes, and I've used it and it's deterred rabbits and birds. It might be worth looking at that. You know, it's a company called Defenders, and whether they include badgers in that, I'm not sure. But it's a tough one. I mean, with my sweet corn, I've just had to net it, but unfortunately I haven't had any badgers, because the netting wouldn't stop the badgers getting through.
They're big animals and they're quite determined, aren't they? So it's not easy to...
Not had badgers. We've had 3 foxes in the garden this year, but no badgers. And apart from eating all my frogs, They haven't actually done it downward, no, they're there, but yes, but they do keep emptying the pond of frogs. And we've only got time for a few more questions, I think. They keep coming in, which is great. Sharon Wheatley, I find an eco-friendly washing up liquid to wash the greenhouse down and then white vinegar is the best to clean and sterilise. So top tip there from Sharon.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah. Who else have we got? RoboTube is asking about tomatillos. So he's growing them for the first time. Not all of them are filling the filigree balloon. That's a nice description. I like that. I like that, RoboTube. Filigree balloon. When are they ready for picking? Anyone grown tomatillos? I think I've grown them accidentally, more as an ornamental than to eat. Although I do like eating them when you get them on your plate in the restaurant. I do quite like them. But I think you basically have to wait until you can see them colouring up, don't you, the berries inside.
You have to wait, just a bit waiting game for them, really. It's just not quite ready yet.
Can be quite late, can't they? And the balloon around them goes yellow. You split that open, you should find them going red. Have we got time for one more? We've got Mary Doyle, who says, good morning, a total new to gardening. She just ordered her first polytunnel and just wondering where she can get a beginner's guide for monthly sowing, etc. Kitchen Garden magazine, of course. Undercover every month, which is for greenhouses and polytunnels. But also one of our writers, Joyce Russell, has done an excellent book on polytunnels. So if you want something just on polytunnels, everything from buying one to putting it up to filling it with, you know, all year round. So look out for Joyce Russell's polytunnel book, I think.
It's very good. It's really good.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're more or less at the end there. I'm getting warnings that we're running out of time. So thanks everyone for watching.
Thank you.
Hope you've enjoyed it. We've certainly enjoyed answering your questions, haven't we?
Yeah, it's been good.
I'm sorry we didn't get through all of them. But look out for the next live stream. We'll be doing another one, I'm sure. And if you can save your questions for them or for then, or think of any more, then please feel free to join in again. So we hope you've enjoyed it, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe to Kitchen Garden Prime for just $4.99 per month. You'll be getting a whole lot for your plot, including an easy-read tablet and phone edition to read anywhere, anytime, exclusive access to 10 years of digital back issue archives, access to exclusive content from the online allotment, the Mudketeers website, plus the monthly print magazine will be delivered free to your door each month. Head to classicmagazines.co.uk/KGPrime to sign up today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.